I'm Steve Lascalzo, and this is The Way. Welcome to the first recap and discussion of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Two episodes became available to stream through Disney Plus on May 26th, shortly before midnight in the Eastern Time Zone. This podcast you're listening to now is my attempt to break down what's going on in just the first episode, even though two are available. I think it's best to keep things separate, and my plan was originally to not even watch the second episode until I had finished everything on the first. I couldn't help myself, so you won't hear speculation in here about what happens in the second episode. But you might hear speculation that reaches beyond into episode 3, unless to do that I have to reference part 2. And that leads me to my first point. Obi-Wan Kenobi, unlike The Mandalorian or The Book of Boba Fett, does not break up the episodes into chapters. OBK calls episode 1 part 1. I recorded and released a First Impressions podcast episode for part 1 Friday morning, and it's available now. I'd love it if you were able to listen to that episode first, but if you don't have time for that, well, I hope you'll stick around and come back for part 2's discussion.
This is The Way.
This is The Way. This is The Way.
Part 1 is directed by the showrunner, Deborah Chow. I think she does a terrific job, except for one minor issue I'll explain. Well, that's still quite a feat. I believe she's going to be credited with directing all 6 episodes of this limited series. The writing credits for the pilot are complicated. The story is credited to Stuart Beatty and original writer of the series, Hossein Amini. He left the project while it was still in pre-production, and a new writer was brought in to fix the scripts to fit a new direction Chow wanted to take. That writer, Joby Harold, is credited with the teleplay for the episode alongside Amini and Beatty. I take that to mean there wasn't a lot of changes made to the first episode, and that Amini's original vision for the episode remains intact. There might be huge differences, I don't know, but Amini and Beatty are credited in both places, and there's no written by credit per guild rules. The runtime shows 56 minutes. That's not an accurate representation of what it takes to sit down and watch. There is a recap segment at the beginning, which comes right after the Disney Plus snap. It runs about 4 minutes. There's a 30-second Lucasfilm Limited and Star Wars slate that has music underneath it. And then the episode begins and runs for about 44 minutes until the screen goes to black and the credits begin. The thumbnail description available on the show's Disney Plus episodes tab reads, "When agents of the Empire pose a new threat, Obi-Wan Kenobi emerges after years of hiding." The episode description on the show's page when you select that episode is much different in text, but similar in context. It reads, "Obi-Wan Kenobi lives a humble existence on Tatooine. Despite the dangers of being a Jedi survivor at the height of the Empire, Kenobi is forced to emerge from hiding." Ewan McGregor reprises his turn in the role of the title character, Alec Guinness, of course, playing him in the original trilogy, and then McGregor in the prequels. Rupert Friend appears as the Grand Inquisitor. The character first appeared in the animated series Star Wars Rebels. Sung Kang is the fifth brother, one of the Inquisitors, also originating in Rebels. Moses Ingram plays the third sister, Reva Savander. I think this is the first time we've seen this character portrayed in live action or animation. Benny Safdie is Nari, the ill-fated Jedi survivor hiding on Tatooine. Joel Edgerton back is Beru's hubby, Owen Lars, reprising his role from Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. Bonnie P.S. is barely on the screen for a second, I think, but she's still listed in the credits for playing Beru. Jimmy Smits played Bail Organa in the prequels and Rogue One, and he's back again for this show. Simone Kessel plays Breha Organa, adoptive mother of Leia, and she takes over the role after the role was just a non-speaking one in The Revenge of the Sith. Speaking of Alderaan, Vivian Lyra Blair plays Leia. She does a wonderful job as Luke's twin. Grant Feeley plays Leia's twin Luke in a non-speaking role. Michael Peter Balzari, better known by his name in music as Flea, of Red Hot Chili Peppers fame, plays bounty hunter Vect Nokru. Now, I tried several different anagrams for that, and I couldn't come up with anything meaningful, but if you figured it out why he's called that, well, I would love to hear why. Anthony Daniels is in the C-3PO suit, and I suppose he's in it, but maybe he's not. He's just in it for one or two shots, really. The Jedi Master on Coruscant leading the Tai Chi water dancing lessons, kata, on the balcony. That is Minas Velti, played by Ming Q. There were several Jedi younglings, and even though they have speaking roles, I couldn't find any meaningful prior work for them through Google. Teeka the Jawa is played by Leilani Shu, who took on similar roles in The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett. Now, I had to go through a large number of names, and I won't mention all of them, but I did find one. I did. Aviel Young, or Aviel A. Young, plays one of Vect's mercenaries, the male role, and he is our connection to, you guessed it, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a stuntman. Amy Sturtevant is also an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stunt work alum, but she also worked on The Mandalorian and Marvel's Black Widow, and she plays the female mercenary. The theme is by John Williams, but scoring for the show will be done by Natalie Holt, who I think did a great job with Marvel's show Loki. I noticed, though, that in addition to there not being chapters, there was no concept art at the end. I have enjoyed that art after episodes of The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, but I suppose, you know, this show's slightly different, especially since in addition to those other changes, I think this is the first TV series that I've noticed the A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away slate, at least in live action. Well, now I think it's a time I took a quick break, and then it will be time to say,
hello there.
For part one, we get the Disney Plus snap, followed by a 4 minute or so prequel recap video. Personally, I thought this was a terrific inclusion. I won't go through each of the shots here, and I appreciate the ability to skip that's available because on future viewings I will. But for the first view, I thought this set the tone for me, and I do think it was worth that initial viewing. After that, we get the Lucasfilm Limited and Star Wars slate, then a shot of a cityscape. The camera pulls back and we see younglings following their master in a kind of kata. This is Coruscant, and we're at the Jedi Temple. Suddenly, the door opens and clone troopers attack. The Jedi is able to fend off those troopers and herd the younglings inside, but we see more and more troopers attacking, and it's clear this is a flashback to Order 66. In fact, at the end of the scene, we will hear Palpatine's order repeat over and over. When they headed inside, I was wondering if we were about to see Grogu's rescue. But we are not in the same hallway we see in Grogu's Force Vision from the Book of Boba Fett. The Jedi dies, defending the younglings on a raised walkway, and we see Jedi battling below. And we know they'll all lose. Somewhere inside this palace is Anakin Skywalker, earning his Sith apprenticeship. The younglings gather around their fallen master, and then they decide to run. There are five of them, and in the middle is a dark-skinned girl. Could she be Reva? We don't know any of these younglings' names or their fates.
What do we do now?
I think that's by design, and these could either be Jedi we will come to know in this series, or they could just be a way for us to re-enter the world, once again seeing the brutality and pointless slaughter of innocent children. Next is the Obi-Wan Kenobi title slate. And and then a desert planet, Tatooine, and the screen shows us it's 10 years later. A town, maybe Mos Eisley, perhaps Anchorhead, is bustling midday. A dark ship swoops in, lands in the middle of the street, and three figures disembark. First, the Grand Inquisitor, a Powan male and former Jedi Temple guard. Next, the fifth brother, followed by the third sister, Reva Savander. They head to a saloon where the Grand Inquisitor makes clear his reasons for the visit. There's rumors of a Jedi hiding out here, and we heard in the trailer, the Jedi have an itch to scratch, and that's compassion.
What is the Jedi to do? Help you and risk exposure? Or move on? Now, if he were smart, he'd keep moving, but the Jedi code is like an itch. He cannot help it!
During the monologue, the third sister grows impatient, grabs a knife from a table, and throws it at the saloon keeper. Well, the knife freezes in midair, and the Jedi, a human male, we'll find out his name's Nari, is revealed, just like the Grand Inquisitor had predicted. There's three Inquisitors here, and Nari tries going right past them. He's blocked, and he is to be prepared for interrogation, but Nari says they're wasting their time. Reva again grows impatient, and instead of a knife at the saloon keep, she intends to strike down the Jedi with her saber. The Grand Inquisitor stops her red blade and saves the Jedi momentarily, and then he escapes. I don't think it was realistic to me that he got away, but I think the Inquisitors actually enjoy the hunt, even though the Powan says he thinks they hunt themselves. Reva considers Nari scraps.
You are reckless.
What chase after scraps?
Scraps are all we have left.
Then we should be hunting bigger prey.
He is not yours to find. We are past this, third sister. I will not warn you again. You will forget this fixation with Kenobi, or I will relieve you of your duties. Is that clear?
Yes, Grand Inquisitor.
The real prize, the one she's obsessed with, is Kenobi. But how do they know he's still alive if he's been so careful and cut off for so long? The Grand Inquisitor intends to relieve Reva of her duties if she persists, and she pretends to relent. The screen fades from town to twin suns over a dune-covered desert, and what looks like an outcropping of rocks is actually the carcass of a beast half buried in the sands. I thought on the initial watch and first impression video, or podcast rather, that it was a crate dragon. But that's not correct. The beast looks like a stingray or a shark, maybe. Maybe even a live-action representative of a purgle. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is seems to have crashed into the sands and died after skidding to a stop. This is where Obi-Wan is earning a living, cutting and packaging the meat of the great beast, and when the whistle sounds the end of the day, he cuts a small portion off and tucks it in his shirt. It's going to be for his Eopi, so he's fueling his ride to his homestead. Obi-Wan doesn't want to make the same mistake Nari did, so when a worker is cheated out half his pay, Obi-Wan does nothing. He clocks out, rides a transport to Anchorhead. After his ride home, an astromech pops its periscope out of the ground and signals an all clear in blue. Obi-Wan enters his cave, makes a meal, sits down, only to be interrupted by a Jawa. It's one he's familiar with, Tika. The Jawa remarks about his awful smell a few times and has found the toy Ben's been looking for. It's a shuttle. This was clear to me. I knew it was going to be a gift for Luke. But it's one meant to inspire wanderlust. Tika has something else, though. A stolen processor for Obi-Wan's vaporator, and he also has the belt of a Jedi salvaged from that Jedi's ship. This is probably Nari's property, although Obi-Wan doesn't know it. He's also not letting on that he's a Jedi as well. In fact, he tells Tika they're all probably extinct. It feels as if Obi-Wan has truly lost hope. Perhaps it's because he doesn't sleep well. And that night, he seems to have visions through the Force, or perhaps just nightmares, and he wakes up. He calls upon his Master Qui-Gon, but there's no answer.
Master Qui-Gon, master.
The next day, he sets out for his real job. He heads to the Lars farm and sits on an overlook and watches as Luke runs off from work and imagines himself as a pod racer. This is the kind of adventure Obi-Wan wants to promote. He misses his friend Anakin, and I think part of him wishes he could have a relationship like that with his friend's son, since he thinks his friend is gone. At night, he leaves the gift outside the Lars homestead and then returns to his cave across the desert, but he's intercepted. Somehow, Nari has not only tracked him down specifically, but found Obi-Wan in the desert at night. Obi-Wan pretends he isn't who he is, but Nari knows it's him and questions why would this great Jedi be out there. Obi-Wan does not want the attention and basically tells off his fellow Jedi.
You must leave. You'll draw too much attention.
But I have nowhere to go. They're hunting me. You have to help me.
You want my help? Take this. Walk into the middle of the desert and bury it in the ground.
The next set of scenes are probably my favorites of the episode. The unmistakable scenery of Alderaan comes into view. This planet will be destroyed in less than 10 years, but right now it's a wealthy and wonderful place to live, thanks to the Organa family. That, of course, includes a certain princess. We think we're watching Leia being dressed, but taking a page out of her biological mother's playbook, Leia has a double, and her handmaiden steps in. Leia would rather run and play outside with her trusty droid, Lola. A new class of droid, I think, which is sure to be a toy hit. She's watching ships take off, daydreaming of getting off-world. Her mother comes to fetch her to meet relatives coming from off-world. Breha wasn't a speaking part in Revenge of the Sith, but we hear her now, gently scolding her daughter and taking Lola from her like a parent would a game machine. But Leia gets it back. We see a figure is watching from the woods as Leia and her mother re-enter the house. Once again, we see Obi-Wan at the worksite, and once again, we follow him to Anchorhead. We're seeing the monotony of his life here. This time, Owen meets him at his hitched Eopie ride. Owen is mad about the gift, and we see and hear the scene from the trailer and exclusive clip where Owen lays the burn down.
When the time comes, he must be trained.
Like you trained his father? Anakin is dead, Ben. And I won't let you make the same mistake twice.
The Inquisitors show up, and Obi-Wan kind of freaks out. His mission and the future of the Jedi Order are in grave danger. Owen clearly doesn't like Ben, and if he had his way, would he turn Ben in to be rid of him? The fifth brother and third sister question the crowd about a Jedi hiding. But it's Reva who intimidates with threats. Not only does she threaten to take the hands of people who get in their way, she does it. She slices off the hand of a woman who dares question their authority in the Outer Rim.
This is the Outer Rim. You have no rights here. We're not under the Empire's... All we want is information.
Hey, this is the Wild West, lady. Reva's gaze meets Owen next, and she targets him. Now, my New York relatives made it very clear to me growing up, never look someone crazy in the eyes. Well, if someone doesn't come forward with information, Reva is threatening to kill Owen and his whole family. The fifth brother prefers the carrot to the stick, placing a bounty puck down with a 100,000 credit reward for Nari. He also takes the third sister aside, and it seems clear all her brothers and sisters and her boss are sick of her obsession. They leave town, and so does Owen and Ben. Obi-Wan thanks Owen for remaining quiet, but once again, Lars lays down the burn.
Thank you, Owen.
I didn't do it for you.
Back on Alderaan, Leia and her father bond over a love of identifying starships as they wait for relatives to arrive. Breha's family is coming for dinner, it seems. Leia's cousin is a brat. And at the reception, she thanks a protocol droid like C-3PO, who incidentally is there, translating at the reception.
Your Highness.
Oh, thanks, Wyo.
My pleasure.
You thank your droids?
It's good manners.
Leia's cousin seems to feel like everyone else is beneath him and insults Leia, saying she's not even a real Organa. Leia is strong-willed, and honestly, the young actress does an awesome job delivering a burn that would make Owen Lars proud.
You don't need manners when you're talking to a lower life form.
Then I guess I don't need manners when I'm talking to you.
She doesn't get distracted by the insults. Instead, I wonder if she's actually calling on the Force unwittingly, pinpointing her cousin's own insecurities and how he parrots his father's talking points without even understanding them.
You're scared of him. Your father. You want him to like you, so you repeat what he says, even though you don't really know what it means. You think being like him will make people frightened of you, but really, you're the one who's scared. You've never made one decision for yourself in your entire life, and you never will. I may not have seen much, cousin, but I can see that.
This scene is such an elegant way of displaying exactly who Leia is, even at an early age. Politician? Not even by choice, but she studied her mark, took him down, and her biological mother, Padme, would be proud too. After the reception, Breha wants her to apologize, but Bail has a talk with his adopted daughter that shows perfect parenting. He relates to her, he reassures her that she is every bit an Organa, and he redirects her, or at least he tries.
It's people in itchy clothes arguing.
Well, it may seem so.
I don't want to be a senator.
Which is why you'll probably be one of the best.
Not even a real Organa.
Don't ever say that. You are a child. You are an Organa in every way. One day this planet will look to you, Leia. There are many ways to lead. You just have to find yours.
Sadly, Bail's designs for his daughter involve a doomed planet, though neither of them know it, of course. He recommends strongly that she apologize to make the problem go away, but Leia runs off again. This time, she runs into the Watcher in the woods and his mercenaries. Vect Nokru is a bounty hunter, and they chase her through the woods. On my second and third watch, the direction here is still weak. It's not really believable to me that she could have slipped away while they chased after her. The direction should have been to the actress to take it slow, you know you're going to catch her. But either in the editing or the shot setup, she would have easily been caught almost immediately. One of the household guard tries to save her but is shot dead. Leia, Princess of Alderaan, is captured. Obi-Wan is in his cave on Tatooine when he hears a signal. It's an incoming call from Bail, the keeper and watcher of the other Skywalker twin. Obi-Wan doesn't want to help, though. He has his own charge. Bail's wealthy. Not wanting to draw attention to Leia, he opts for a stealth rescue, which is weird, considering she's planetary royalty, even to Lor San Tekka, right?
Only you know how important she really is, Obi-Wan. If Leia is discovered...
I can't leave here, Bail. My duty is to the boy.
What about your duty to his sister? She's as important as he is.
Obi-Wan's inner fire is out. And I have to say, it's relatable, isn't it? Aren't there times when you're doing this one job, no one's helping you, and then all of a sudden you're asked to help someone else who clearly has the resources and time that you don't?
Find someone else. She'll be better off.
Let go of me!
Shut her up.
On the mercenary side of things, Leia is tied up and they head off-world. Ben, meanwhile, goes through his meatpacking routine once again, but when he's in Anchorhead, he sees the strung-up body of Nari. So, the Inquisitors got their man. This time, when he returns home, the astromech buried in the sand indicates danger with a red periscope. Someone is inside the cave. It is a little tense, but it turns out it's Senator Organa. He's coming to plead his case in person. He needs Obi-Wan. And she needs Obi-Wan.
You couldn't save Anakin. But you can save her.
And what if I can't?
There is no one I trust more with my child than you. Please, old friend. For her. One last fight.
Speaking of a fight, Leia is putting one up on the ship, taking out Lola from her pocket while she's tied up and turning her on. So Lola tries cutting Leia's bonds. But Vect enters the hold and smashes Lola. What I appreciate is that even losing her droid friend, Leia keeps a semblance of composure. She's got wisdom and restraint beyond her years, and thank goodness she's not a whiny crybaby.
My father will rescue me! He'll send a whole army!
No one's coming for you.
That's a fine line, I think, for child actors, and this girl does it very well. Obi-Wan seems to have had a change of heart. Earlier in the episode, he had told Nari to bury his lightsaber and his problems out in the desert. Well, that's what Ben did earlier in his stay on Tatooine. He must be using the Force to locate his buried treasure because, I mean, there's sand everywhere and there's no kind of landmark at all. Back on the ship for a quick moment, we're given the impression that these are not people looking for ransom. They've been hired by someone to kidnap Leia. Then back to Tatooine, Obi-Wan finds his prize. It's a wooden box containing two lightsabers. One is his Padawan's and a future gift to Anakin's son. Later, then also, by proxy to Rey. The other is his own. Back with the Mercs, and we see it was indeed Reva who hired them, and she explains the ploy to draw out Obi-Wan. All that's left is to see if he takes the bait. Well, there never really was a doubt, was there? Because we're watching this series. Obi-Wan pauses before paying for passage off-world. And the episode ends with Obi-Wan approaching the ship, intending to leave the planet for the first time in 10 years, lightsaber at his hip.
Well, you coming or not?
What do you think? I can tell you, I thought this was a tremendously successful first episode, and if they could only figure out how to make a foot chase believable, that this might have been a perfect episode here. To me, the young Leia makes this episode. And here we all were speculating about the possibility of Ben protecting Luke. We find out here it was almost like a bait and switch. McGregor delivers a restrained performance of a tortured soul who has lost hope. You know, rebellions are built on hope, so he'll have to find it. And I think by the end of the series, we'll see that Obi-Wan attitude that we grew up watching in A New Hope and beyond.
He's more machine now than man, twisted and evil.
I can't do it, Ben.
You cannot escape your destiny. You must face Darth Vader again.
I can't kill my own father.
Then the Emperor has already won. You were our only hope.
All right, that's it for episode 1, part 1. Episode 2, part 2 was released the same day, May 26, 2022, just before midnight Eastern. And I'll have another reaction podcast and recap and discussion available for you soon. You can always send feedback or comments. Email us, thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @thisisthewaypod or on facebook.com/thisisthewaypod. I'm your host, Steve Lascazo, and this is the way. May the Force be with you always.